What is up? It's the Pro Football Focus Fantasy Podcast. My name is Jeff Ratcliffe, and it's Friday, April 12th. Less than 2 weeks away from the NFL Draft. Exciting times, and on the show today, we are going to break down top 10s at wide receiver and running back in terms of this year's rookies. Of course, over at profootballfocus.com, you can check out my detailed, and I mean detailed, rankings for each position. I went 53 running backs deep and 80 wide receivers deep in this year's class. And yes, that's a little bit excessive, but you aren't going to find a more comprehensive list of rankings and player evaluations for fantasy purposes anywhere out there. And you never know which some of these deeper names, that's part of the reason why I like to go so deep. Some of these UDFAs who may surface, or they could surface elsewhere. Last year, one of the last guys I did at running back was D'Ernest Johnson, who ends up surfacing as an AAF guy. Anyway, check those out. We'll break down the top 10 on the show today. I got to talk about a little bit of news around the NFL, and I got to talk briefly about the release of Pro Football Focus's 2019 projections. The initial batch is out. It's live on the site. You have to be an Edge subscriber to check it out, but the numbers are darn good this year, and I'll tell you why in a little bit. But like I said, I want to dive right into the news here. And coming across the wire yesterday, not good news for Jacksonville Jaguars running back Leonard Fournette. He was arrested in Jacksonville for speeding and driving with a suspended license. Now, it was the suspended license, not the speeding, that ultimately got him arrested. The Jaguars commenting, saying they're aware of the situation. They had no further comment at the time. It's one of those things that, you know, in the grand scheme of off-field incidents in the history of the NFL, is one of the most minor. It's not, you know, it's not one of those things where we're appalled by this, or, you know, it's a bonehead mistake. Let's call it what it is. It's a mistake that you don't want to see happen for any player or anybody, but it's a bonehead mistake. It's not that significant. We'll see if there's any disciplinary action. But here's the more important thing. We want to see Leonard Fournette on the straight and narrow, because this guy can be a strong fantasy option, a strong NFL running back, if he's on the straight and narrow, if he's in shape, if he's committed to the program, you know, et cetera, both on and off the field. So you don't want to see these little things. These little things start to add up. But regardless, right now, I think Fournette's more of a borderline RB1. So, you know, you might look at him as like number 12, 13, 14 in terms of rankings. I think that's a fair spot for him. We'll see if anything comes of this. I really don't think it does. A couple signings to get to. Chris Hogan signing with the Carolina Panthers. Actually, right before I hit record on the show, not a good landing spot for Chris Hogan. A landing spot, in fact, that I think pretty much seals the deal for him to have minimal fantasy value this year, if he even has any. Because when you look down through that depth chart, right now, I mean, DJ Moore solidified as the top receiving option with Devin Funchess out of the mix. You also have Curtis Samuel, who was coming on strong. I mean, I guess the number three spot is somewhat up for grabs, because Jarius Wright would figure to be the top option there, but in the same right, they signed Rashad Ross from the AAF, who has an outside chance. He's a little bit up there in age, but an outside chance of doing some damage there. Torrey Smith is on this roster as well, so maybe Hogan sneaks into that number three, but even there, I mean, you figure with the volume that Christian McCaffrey sees, the volume we expect Moore to see, Samuel getting his, and then Greg Olsen as well, a tight end. There's just not a lot of targets to be had. So a bad landing spot for him, but I tell you what, a good landing spot for Austin Seferian Jenkins. Lands a one-year deal with the New England Patriots. Of course, they had a hole to fill, a chasm of a hole to fill, with Rob Gronkowski retiring. Seferian Jenkins is not going to fill that, but he'll at least do, you know, partially fill it up. And this is a great opportunity, because this is a team that does not have a lot of receiving talent. You know, obviously James White at running back, but beyond that, Julian Edelman and a whole lot of nothing for this team. So Seferian Jenkins could step right in and be the top receiving target among the tight ends. That being said, it's tough to value him as anything more than a back-end tight end, too. I think there's some appeal in best ball, maybe appeal in deeper leagues, where if you're in a league and there are 25 five or so tight ends drafted. I mean, that's a deeper league. Most leagues, you're going to see about 15 or so tight ends drafted. I would not have Austin Seferian Jenkins as one of the top 15, but I'd certainly have him as one of the top 24, 25, right? And then obviously in best ball, like I said, where you're very likely drafting three, maybe even four, depending on the draft, tight ends, you're talking 36, 40, even more than 40 tight ends sometimes being drafted. It depends on, you know, where you're playing, obviously, but he'll have some value there. So a good landing spot for him. The Patriots also signing Steven Gostkowski, so he's back, and he'll be one of the top kickers if you happen to be in leagues with kickers. Don't at me about having kickers in fantasy leagues. I'm already being added enough about my comments on David Johnson not being a fantasy bust last year. People really get their panties in a bunch when you call them out on problematic ideas. And the idea with David Johnson is really simple here. He was the number three running back taken. I get it. It's a premium pick. But he finishes the number 9 on the season and the number 11 on a points per basis, on a points per game basis. So he was still an RB1 no matter which way you slice it. And RB1s essentially were being drafted either in the first or second round last year. So he didn't give you 100% return on investment, but it wasn't really as terrible as a lot of people have made it out to be. I don't think so. And I don't think that's a bust. I think a bust is Terrell Pryor in 2017, a guy who you draft in the third round and finishes like the number 80 fantasy wide receiver. Like, absolute dreadful bust. I know some people want to call Le'Veon Bell a bust last year. I just think that was a catastrophe. I don't even think bust sums it up. It was awful. It was terrible. No way would he sit out the whole season. Yeah, he sat out the whole freaking season. But David Johnson wasn't a bust. And anybody who's tweeting me saying that David Johnson lost you your fantasy season, I maybe you should get better at drafting. I don't see how your first round pick should ever cost you your fantasy season. I won a league last year while drafting Le'Veon Bell, like I said I would, at number 2 overall. And I still won the league. It's not about that first pick. It's about once you get past the top 100 or so, top 60 to 100 players, once people get past those lists and they don't know who to take in the middle rounds, that's where you make your team. That's where you dominate. It's not the first round pick. So people are very upset about that one. I already have enough people adding me right now. But I stand to it. I stand by that. I stick to my story. He wasn't a bust. He was disappointing. But he does seem to be the en vogue player right now, who a lot of people are writing their fantasy articles about. I think he, you know, ultimately number 6, number 7 running back. I think that's fine. Anything higher than that, he'll be overdrafted. Anything lower than that, you get him at a value. And I mean, that's the name of the game. Really, you getting players at a value is the name of the game. You're not going to hit on every single player in a fantasy draft. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already know that. But you're going to hit on more players, you know, especially if you're listening to this show. Toot. Yes, I'm going to toot my own horn here. You're going to hit on more players than you don't hit on. And if you can hit on 60, 65% of your players, you're going to dominate your leagues. You don't have to hit on all of them. David Johnson, that's going to happen from time to time in the first round. And it's going to be a disappointment. But the thing is, the dude played all 16 games. It was up and down. It was a roller coaster. I get it. People want immediate gratification every single week. But over the long haul, Johnson, not that bad on a terrible team, and certainly not a fantasy bust. But anyway, if you feel otherwise, you can continue to at me at Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter. But let's move on. Ty Montgomery signed with the Jets. I don't even know if he makes a team, to be honest with you, because when you look at the depth chart, obviously the aforementioned Le'Veon Bell is there. He's locked in as the lead back. And then they have two younger backs who they seem to like, you know, Elijah McGuire and Trenton Cannon. And I would go as far as to say, I have to figure Trenton Cannon is almost a lock to make the team because of his role in special teams. So then you're talking Montgomery has to essentially beat out Elijah McGuire. We'll see. Ty Montgomery's fantasy arrow definitely pointing down. By the way, we're, you know, just under 2 weeks away from figuring out what's going to happen with Josh Rosen. There's a lot of reports now linking Washington to Josh Rosen as, you know, the favorite to trade for him. If they get him, this is one of those rare things. Like, a few weeks ago, I thought, no, that's crazy. Like, in the, you know, I guess a few months ago, I thought, that's crazy. They won't take Kyler. They just took a quarterback last year. But now the more you think about it, if they traded him away, they get reasonable value for him. They're probably not going to get, you know, equal value, but if they get 90 cents on the dollar, 95 cents on the dollar, and they're able to get Kyler Murray, the quarterback that they seemingly like, although it's the season of liars, so who knows, but if they get him and then Washington gets Rosen, is that not a win-win for, you know, both teams? It's a win because Arizona gets a quarterback who fits their system a little bit better and the guy who they want. It's a win for Washington. They get a quarter. They don't have a quarterback. Case Keenum's not the answer to the question. There is no question out there other than when you go to him and say, hey, dude, what's your name? Case Keenum. That's about the only time that's the answer to the question. Case Keenum's not the answer. But Josh Rosen in that system with Jay Gruden, I kind of like that. So we'll see. But the report is that they have received some offers for Josh Rosen at this point. Not a huge surprise. We'll also see about Duke Johnson. He requested a trade. Some of the teams linked to him, the Texans, the Eagles, the Cowboys. Figure the Eagles have a need there because Jordan Howard's not going to catch the ball out of the backfield. And they have a couple Jags in that backfield as well in Wendell Smallwood, Corey Clement. Duke Johnson would be a nice upgrade on those guys, and he would really fit that system. So it'd be interesting to see if a move is made there. Either way, all of that still to come here. But I mentioned Rashad Ross signing, a couple other names who signed from the AAF. The Eagles went and signed Charles Johnson, Greg Ward, Luis Perez. That depth chart, there's not a lot of room for those two wide receivers there in Johnson and Ward. And of course, Johnson, one of the better receivers from a statistical standpoint in the AAF, but he's already 30 years old. And when you look down, the top three spots are locked in. Alshon, Deshaun, and Nelson Aguilar locked in. They have young receivers in Mac Hollins and Shelton Gibson that they like. There's a lot of players on this depth chart right now. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out, but I'm not optimistic for either of them. Perez could potentially give Nate Sudfeld a little bit of a run for his money. There's a lot of things to like about Perez, but either way, you at least get your third quarterback in there for training camp in Perez. The Dolphins signing Reese Horn, who came on strong. Keep an eye on Reese Horn. He came on strong down the stretch of the AAF. And then Kenneth Farrow, who essentially will slot in as their number three. Those two have maybe the best outlooks of any of the AAF guys who were signed. DeMornay Pearson L signed with the Raiders as a slot receiver. There's not much room for him there on that depth chart. And then two quarterbacks, Brandon Silvers signing with the Jets, Logan Woodside signing with the Titans. So, you know, not a lot of juice from the AAF, but it would be nice to see if some of these guys actually make an impact in the NFL. I don't think there's much fantasy implications here. But speaking of fantasy implications, well, we did release the first batch of projections at Pro Football Focus for 2019. So fantasy football projections. And this year, we took a slightly different approach. So historically, since I took over in the position that I'm in, which was a little over 3 years ago, it was essentially just me producing projections, which, as you can imagine, that's a full-time job unto itself, much less doing all the other things that that I have to do. So I got a little bit of help this year in a good way. We have a data science team at Pro Football Focus now, and we're really fortunate to have those guys on board. If you paid attention to our Green Line product, they're the masterminds behind that for gambling. And the idea was to leverage their math skills. I am not a mathematician. I have decent math chops. I can work my way around Excel pretty darn good, but I don't have a PhD in mathematics. I do actually have a PhD, believe it or not, but it is not in mathematics. So we're going to leverage that knowledge, and all of the numbers that power Greenline are now also powering in the background our fantasy projections with insights from yours truly in terms of player usage, team tendencies, all of that stuff that I study all the time you know, in season and out of season, all of that going in. So combining the best of both worlds, the fantasy insight from me and my team, and the mathematics and all of the data insight from all the amazing data we have at Pro Football Focus from the data science team to produce these numbers. And I tell you what, I'm really happy with the initial set of numbers. They're dynamic. They're going to be adjusting as odds adjust, as new information comes in terms of PFF grading. It's a new era, the 2.0 in terms of fantasy football projections. Now, I should also mention, though, that projections are not rankings, and that's really an important distinction to note. Rankings are the end spot for fantasy purposes. Projections are the starting spot. And I know that there's sometimes a confusion between the two, but you know, the thing about projections is they're ultimately a set of averages, right? And averages can tell you a lot, but they also will kind of hide a few things like ceiling floor, for example, where you can be a little bit more aggressive and factor in ceiling floor into your rankings. So keep that one in mind. I always say that for me, projections are about, 75-80% of my rankings. They're where I start, but when I finish is my ultimate product in terms of rankings. That's what I build my draft board off of. That's what I use to make my start sit decisions. And in some instances as well, I use it to make DFS decisions. I don't just solely rely on projections for DFS. So something to keep in mind there as you look at projections, because you're going to notice that some of the projections are going to be a little bit different than what you'll see with rankings. For example, a quarterback, hey, Patrick Mahomes, yeah, he's at the top. Big surprise, right? But you may be actually surprised when you go in and take a look at our projections, because you're going to see at quarterback, there's a couple names who are pretty high up the list. Carson Wentz, our numbers love Carson Wentz. Our numbers love Jameis Winston. Right now, Wentz is coming in at number 3, Winston at 6. Current ADP has Wentz at 9 and Winston at 11. And there's a few things, you know, you might think, well, why is that? I mean, we've already seen Carson Wentz put up elite fantasy production 2 years ago, so it's not that far-fetched. Plus, getting D-Jax in there, that's helpful. Getting Jordan Howard to provide some more stability in the run game, that's going to be helpful. There's a lot of factors at play there. But Jameis is surrounded by a lot of talent. That helps. It's a new situation as well. I think this is the year where we really see him take a step forward. He's one of my favorite targets this year with my upside guy. Remember, I like a safe and upside approach at quarterback, where I get a safer guy, somebody like a Phillip Rivers. He's like the quintessential safe guy, and then an upside guy. Last year, the upside guy was Patrick Mahomes. I don't think Jameis has that type of season, but I do think he can very well provide a solid return on investment this year. Another thing that people are going to notice is Baker Mayfield is a little bit further down than where he's coming off the board. You're seeing him in best ball drafts, typically about the 8th quarterback off the board. He comes in at number 16 in our initial set of projections. And in talking to the data science team about that, the idea essentially here is that we do expect some touchdown regression. Not major, but minor. I mean, hey, we expect that for Patrick Mahomes as well. We're not projecting 50 touchdown passes. We're projecting 36.6, which is still a big number. But with Baker, some touchdown regression, also some regression in terms of completion percentage, because we do expect targets further downfield with Odell Beckham Jr. in there. That pumps the completion percentage down a little bit. It also potentially bumps the interception rate up a little bit. The moral here is that I think the numbers suggest, well, I don't think, I know, the numbers suggest that Baker Mayfield could be overdrafted this year. I like him, but drafting him inside the top 10 quarterbacks, I think maybe a bit much. I'm viewing him more as maybe 12th or 13th quarterback, which means I'm probably not going to have him in any leagues, may not have any exposure to him whatsoever, which is unfortunate, but I don't want to overdraft players. That's a mistake on draft day that you do not want to make. So you'll notice that, but definitely the numbers worth checking out at quarterback. Of course, we have some interesting numbers at running back as well. The aforementioned David Johnson checks in as the number 6 running back. Our top 5 is very chalky. It's Barkley, Kamara, Elliott, Gurley, McCaffrey. But David Johnson just ahead of Le'Veon Bell. Not over 1,000 yards, but projected at 261 carries, which is a big number, with 57.6 catches, which is a big number, and he does a nice job as a receiver. So he's right there, a tick ahead of Le'Veon Bell, who comes in at 349 touches. If Bell touches the ball that much, he's going to be a top 10 option. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Doesn't matter what team he's on, he's going to be a top 10 option. So it's a good situation for him there. But, you know, some interesting names. I think probably the most interesting, Kenyon Drake comes in at 14. And I know he's one of those guys for fantasy purposes people love to hate. The letdown that he was from time to time. But in the same right, that depth chart's pretty thin. He's little competition for touches, and he's coming off the board after the first 24 running backs right now. So you can get him at a nice value. You're not going to have to draft him as the number 14 running back. And I don't think I'm going to rank him there either, but I'm very likely going to rank him inside the top 20 at the position. Going to wide receiver, and with the wideouts, it's fairly chalky at the top with Thomas and Hopkins and Julio. We do have Juju ahead of Antonio Brown, which I think is interesting. There's no competition for targets. I mean, granted, for either of them, but Pittsburgh's offense just so juiced up from a passing standpoint. OBJ comes in a little low. I mean, he's number 7, so it's not like he's super low or anything like that, but a little bit lower than maybe some people might be looking at him. So just be careful there. But, I mean, he's still going to be a wide receiver 1 with elite upside any given week. Going down through a little bit further, I think the name who stands out the most is another name who apparently pissed off a lot of people about is Chris Godwin. When I showed that it's really going to be impossible for this guy to have 100 catches this season if Mike Evans stays healthy, I did some over-unders on this pod a few weeks back, and I set the over-under for Chris Godwin catches at 75. Our projections have him at 75 catches on the nose, so I think that's the fair expectation. If you're taking the over on 75, you're not taking the over and thinking he's going to have 15 more catches than 75, right? You're taking the over thinking, well, he may have 78, 79, 80, maybe at the most 82. I think that's about the ceiling, I would say, for him. If you're taking the under, it's a tight under. I don't think you think he goes much under 70 catches for the season if he stays healthy. So 75 is a reasonable number. I don't think that Mike Evans gets to 100 catches. This year, this initial batch of projections, we have him at 87.6. So basically 88 catches for him. If he doesn't hit 100, I don't see any way that Chris Godwin does, again, provided both of these guys are healthy for the whole season. Now, granted, if Mike Evans went down, then yeah, our projections and my entire take on Chris Godwin would change, but the initial numbers align almost perfectly with what I expected to see, and that puts him at number 24, which is fine. He's a wide receiver too. Just don't think he's a top 20 option, and I think the hype train may end up having him drafted in that range, which means he'll be overdrafted. Tight end, you have three guys at the top who I think you've heard of before: Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz, and George Kittle. After that, stop me if you've heard this one before as well. Tight end is brutal. Like, absolutely, dreadfully brutal. At number 4, I have Eric Ebron. Number 5, I have O.J. Howard. I don't think people are going to argue with that, but in the same right, just remember, Eric Ebron plays on the same team as Jack Doyle. O.J. Howard plays on the same team as Cameron Brate. Both of these guys are going to catch passes, and they are going to cannibalize off of the other guy for fantasy purposes. And I hate that. You know this experience? You know this experience, right? We all know this experience. You're watching red zone, or you're watching a game, and a tight end scores a touchdown, and you're like, tight end! Oh, it's the other guy. I think that's going to happen a lot for those two. That's your number 4 and number 5. After that, here's the way our projections break down. Evan Ingram, we know how that goes. Kyle Rudolph, low ceiling. Hunter Henry, right there, like literally razor thin with Kyle Rudolph. Unproven. I want to believe in Hunter Henry. I really do. You know I love Hunter Henry. But will Hunter Henry, there I did it, will he break out this year? I hope so, but I can't guarantee it. You know, far from a guarantee. Austin Hooper, Jared Cook, David Njoku, Jimmy Graham. That's your top freaking 12. if there's a year to fold tight end, you know, pitch this rule change in your league to fold tight end into wide receiver and just make it a wide receiver tight end flex, this is the year to do it. It's tough. If you don't have one of those top three this year, you're just praying for a touchdown basically every single week out of your tight end, because it is ugly. And I don't really see anybody who is like super sexy, deep name, going to break out. Like, hey, I'll promote Chris Herndon. Do we really believe he's going to be a huge breakout though? I mean, no. You know, you look down through some of these guys, maybe Vance McDonald, but that could be inconsistent on a week-to-week basis and probably maddeningly inconsistent. There's a lot of injury-prone guys. After you get outside the top 12, there's a lot of old dudes. Greg Olsen at 13, Jason Witten at 20, Delanie Walker at 18. I mean, it's just a terrible situation. So anyway, yeah, tight end is brutal. Let's get to wrap the show up. Let's get to our top 10s here at running back and at wide receiver in this year's rookie class. If you want the entire list, though, you can go to profootballfocus.com. You can read my fantasy scouting reports on each of these guys. We'll start at running back, and we'll do reverse order here. We'll save a little, you know, build up to the end. At number 10, I do have Bryce Love. I know the numbers dipped last year. He's coming off the torn ACL as well. But he did have a couple numbers that I think are telling. Fifth in the nation in forced missed tackles per attempt and 13th in yards after contact per attempt. So he had 3.5 after contact per attempt. He's still a really good athlete. You know, the ACL, that stinks. But I think he's going to be one of those guys that you end up getting at a value when it comes to your dynasty rookie draft. So I'm not going to just completely throw the towel in on him just yet. Travion Williams up next at number 9, undersized, but three down ability. You know, last year was a big year from a statistical standpoint. I like the 4.51 in the 40. The three cone, the short shuttle times weren't that impressive though. So the size, the lateral movement, there are knocks on him, but he does have that three down ability. Number 8, Justice Hill. Did not have a problem at the combine. 4.40, 40-inch vert, 10.10 in the broad. You know, just great testing numbers there. Not necessarily a size guy, you know, a three-down size type guy, but it's the big play upside. You know, he's the type of player who doesn't necessarily need that full workload to still give you a full week's worth of fantasy production. Number 7, Rodney Anderson, injury plague. We know that, but the size, I mean, that it's NFL size. He looks like an NFL running back at 6 foot, 224. Strong as well. You know, 25 bench reps at the combine. I don't put much stock in running back bench reps, but it's one of those things where I'm glad that I saw that. It's a lot better than seeing like 6 bench reps or something like that, but so effective on the field. He's going to be a really interesting name. He's one of those guys that, you know, maybe not super high in terms of rankings, but if he lands in the right spot, he could move up somewhat significantly in my post-draft rookie rankings, which those come out right away. Typically, we look at Monday after the draft, and we're releasing those things along with my draft board for your rookie drafts. Number 6, Devin Singletary, Motor Singletary. He performed really well in Conference USA. The one question a lot of times I have with the guys who weren't Power 5 guys is how do they perform stepping up in class. He's undersized. He ran a 4.66 at the combine as well. You know, so he's got the three down skill set. He's got the big play ability, but there's a couple knocks on him that keep him a little bit further down in my rankings. Number 5, Damian Harris, Alabama. Part of that loaded Alabama backfield. You know, he was really essentially the lead guy, but he's not my favorite in terms of transferring to the NFL, but he's still going to be a solid option. There's a lot to like about Damian Harris. You know, just in general, he can be a three-down guy. He's not a big play guy, but in the same right, could he handle volume in the NFL? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Number 4, Darrell Henderson. Very elusive. 6.17 yards after contact per attempt. That's sick. That is sick right there. 8.9 yards per carry in each of the last two seasons. And, you know, he's capable of catching the ball out of the backfield. He's undersized a little bit, but he has the home run hitting ability, the three down versatility. He's an interesting name in this year's class. Number 3, David Montgomery. looks the part of a prototype NFL back. Not productive from a yards per carry efficiency basis last year, but his offensive line wasn't very good, so I'm not going to knock him on that. 4.63 40 time. So, you know, maybe not big plays, but I don't think that's, you know, if I see a slower 40 time at wide receiver, yeah, that's concerning. 4.63, it's not like he ran 4.8. You know, 4.63, there are a number of guys who have done that, who have run 4.6 in the past and have been solid running backs. So I'm not overly concerned there. I think, you know, you look at him as one of the better long-term options in this year's class. Miles Sanders comes in at number two. Now, here's the thing. Miles Sanders, very impressive at the combine. Very, very impressive. The numbers, he tested extremely well. The knock on him is the fumbling issue. I get it. I understand that. Fifth among FBS backs with at least 150 carries in fumble percentage last year. That's not good. But it's that athleticism and also the fact that he did perform pretty well finally outside of Saquon Barkley's shadow. You know, go watch, you know, watch some of his spin moves. Watch the jump cuts that Miles Sanders is capable of, and you're going to be impressed. And it's enough for me to kind of bump down the concerns about the fumbling issues. Of course, number one, you probably already know this, Josh Jacobs. Not a massive workload at Alabama, which I think is a good thing. He kind of, you know, he looks like a little bit, you know, similarities with Alvin Kamara in some ways, maybe not as explosive, but just the fact that he's capable of, you know, running the ball out of the backfield and catching the ball out of the backfield. You know, 12.4 yards per catch at the college level. It's a three down. He's a three down player. I think he's the top overall player in this year's draft class, regardless of his landing spot, unless it's just absolutely dreadful. But I can't see that happening. He's very likely going to have the opportunity to be the lead dog immediately out the gate, which is a good thing. And based on the scarcity at running back, he's not a Saquon, but just the scarcity, positional scarcity, bumps him up. I think he has the top overall rookie in this year's class and certainly the top running back. Now let's shift over to wide receiver. Like I said, these just released at Pro Football Focus and they are definitely worth checking out because, well, I went extremely deep, 80 players deep. I'm not obviously going through all 80. We'll just do the top 10 here, but you know, there's a lot of interesting names in this class. Again, it's not an elite class. At the top, there's an elite athlete, but I wouldn't necessarily say just rock star wide receiver. But in the same right, there's a lot of talent here that ultimately will be fantasy relevant. So starting at 10, Kelvin Harmon. Initially was maybe a little bit more impressed with Harmon, but the more I watched him, and you know, you see that he's more of a possession receiver. He's not a speed guy. He's got good size, and he can make contested catches, so that's good. But he didn't break 4.6 at the combine. He was one of just seven wideouts to not do so. So it's that lack of top-end athleticism that gives him somewhat of a low fantasy ceiling. You know, think Mohamed Sanu, I think, is a good comp for him. Number nine, Debo Samuel. I love the nickname. I mean, I'm a huge Ice Cube fan. And Friday, when I was in college, I probably watched it on repeat, you know, like 100 times. But regardless, he plays like Debo. He muscles up. He's built more like a running back, you know, slightly undersized for a wide receiver, but he plays big. He can find the end zone. And, you know, he has the makings of a PPR slot option at the pro level. At number eight, Paris Campbell. Yeah, he's fast. 4.31, you know, 40-inch vert. I mean, he tested through the roof there at the combine. 111 targets last year and caught 82%, which is impressive. Not a traditional fantasy option at wide receiver, but his upside is just too appealing to overlook. At number seven, one of my favorites in this year's class, Andy Isabella. We know what he did at the combine. We know the 4.31. We know the wild production that he put up last year, 4.16 yards per route run, which is extremely efficient. He's not a big receiver. He's 5'9", 188. But I don't think it matters with him. He can do things, the traditional things out of the slot that you want to see slot receivers do, but he also has the speed to take a top off a defense. He's a really unique player that I think is going to overcome the size issue, and he's going to be a high-volume PPR option at the pro level. Number six, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. big body wideout, 6'2", 225, ran 4.49 at his pro day as well. So that's a good height, weight, speed combination for him. I think you see a little bit of like a smaller Mike Evans in his ability to play above the rim, to make contested catches. I think he's going to be a solid option as well. Next, Hakeem Butler. Size you can't teach. He is absolutely massive at 6'5", 227. And he ran a 4.48 at the combine, so that's really fast for a guy that size. He has that rare ability to get downfield even at his size. He can also obviously play above the rim, so he has that unique combination that is typical of an NFL number one wideout. So I like that. It's the drops issue that he had at the college level that is a little concerning, but I don't knock drops as much as others. So again, it's one of those things maybe I'm going to overlook a little bit more than others. I like Hakeem Butler a lot. At number four, Marquise Brown. He is an absolute freak of nature from a speed standpoint, but of course he is extremely undersized. I think you look at him as DeSean Jackson at maybe sort of the mid-range of his ultimate fantasy profile. You look at possibly Tyreek Hill as his ceiling. I don't think that's out of the question. I'd rather, you know, position him, though, closer to the mid-range. So that means he's going to be a boomer bust option very likely, who is probably better suited to best ball than he is to season long. But there's a lot to like about Marquise Brown, and I don't think we should undersell him. Number three, A.J. Brown, very, very productive. You're just smooth and steady. I think the comp to Juju Smith-Schuster is a very apt one for A.J. Brown. Last year, when Metcalf was hurt, he moved outside and basically played exclusively outside. So even though a lot of people think of Brown as a slot receiver, he can play outside as well. That versatility, his skill set, I think they're going to be very good for the pro level. At number two, N'Keal Harry, Arizona State, another big-bodied receiver, can make those contested catches, make plays above the rim. Also, 27 bench reps. Again, you know, not going to put too much stock into it, but when you're a guy who's going to make contested catches, especially in the red zone, the stronger you are, the better off it is, and this dude is strong. I think you look at him, N'Keal Harry, as a potential long-term top 20 fantasy wide receiver with certainly the potential to crack the wide receiver ones, the top 12, if everything goes his way. And of course, at the very top, number one for me, DK Metcalf. I'm a sucker for it. I really am. Size, 6'3", 228, just chiseled, and freakish numbers in a lot of the testing events. Now, of course, we know three cone, short shuttle, yes, he struggled in those. So in terms of wiggle, no. But this is the time of year where I think a lot of folks who are evaluating the NFL draft are looking for what's wrong with players and sometimes focusing more on that than what's right with them. There are a lot of things that are right with Metcalf. The big play upside that he displayed at Mississippi as well. Now, I'm not crazy about the injury history, but when you look at him overall, he profiles as a fantasy alpha. He could be a future wide receiver one. He could be one of the players who hits the biggest out of this draft class. He's right there with Josh Jacobs as my top two options. I like a lot of what we have with Metcalf. Landing spot, obviously, is going to be critical. But, you know, if he lands in the right spot, he could be producing immediately here in 2018. I wouldn't expect anything better than maybe wide receiver three. That's kind of like the ceiling, I would say, for a lot of these rookie wide receivers, even the most talented. But unless you have like generational guys, but either way, I like them a lot for the long term in dynasty leagues. So there you have it. You can get the rest of them over at ProFootballFocus.com next week to round everything out. We're releasing quarterbacks and tight ends, so I'll do those guys on the pod as well. And so that's going to do it for us today. Go check out ProFootballFocus.com. Go check out JeffRatcliffe.com. For those Rat Pack t-shirts that are officially awesome, of course, on Twitter. If you're going to at me, at Jeff Ratcliffe. And hey, follow at @PFF_fantasy as well for all kinds of goodies that we're releasing there on that Twitter feed. Otherwise, I will catch you on the flip side. Enjoy the Masters. Enjoy the NBA playoffs. Enjoy the NHL playoffs. Enjoy Major League Baseball. Enjoy Game of Thrones. For Pro Football Focus, I'm Jeff Ratcliffe, and I'm out of here.